Although improvements in hypertension control could save thousands of lives per year in the United States, efforts to combat hypertension population-wide have stalled. I'm Stephen Morrissey, managing editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, and I'm talking with Robert Kocher, an adjunct professor at the Stanford University School of Medicine, a non-resident senior scholar at the University of Southern California Schaefer Institute, and a partner at Venrock. Dr. Kocher has co-authored a perspective article about strategies for improving hypertension control in the United States. Dr. Kocher, what factors have contributed to high rates of hypertension in the U.S.?
Like all developed country populations, we have a lifestyle that lends itself to high blood pressure. But what's striking to me is that we haven't done as well as other countries at controlling blood pressure. This actual project began several years ago when I began tracking quality metrics across the U.S. healthcare system, across both commercial and Medicare populations. And what's striking is that really over the last decade, we've made very little improvement. And what's even more striking is the fact that for blood pressure control, one of the things that we're best at controlling and it's most important, we actually regressed some over the last decade from 54% of patients controlled to 50% controlled. And that was really stunning to me because we generally make improvements in everything else, both in healthcare and society. Yet we seem kind of stuck here. And so that was the problem that we tried to unpack in this perspective.
So you say in your perspective article that 40% of adults with hypertension are unaware of their condition. What barriers have led to those gaps?
Well, I think a big one, which is partly what we talk about in the piece, is a business problem, which is for some reason, blood pressure control is not the most important thing on the mind of clinicians, on health systems, on insurance companies, and therefore on patients. And that's led us to be less attentive, I believe, less aggressive in diagnosing the condition, less persuasive in treating it. And even on the consumer side, we haven't seen a flurry of products that have been very appealing to track your blood pressure, yet we have a lot of ways to track our sleep and our heart rate.
Even among people who have been diagnosed with hypertension, what's preventing effective treatment and control? Is it that kind of attention to other things, or what is it?
Well, I think first, it's an incentives problem. If our lives depended on having our patients' blood pressure controlled, we could do a lot better. And what's really striking is that Kaiser Permanente, 90% of their patients are well controlled. The country of Canada achieved 70% of their patients controlled, yet we do worse. And so it's not a biological problem that we don't have an intervention that works. It's something else. And I think it's an incentive problem in that we don't, I think, make the rewards of blood pressure control big enough to motivate all the process changes that need to happen to control it. We could do a bunch of things to do better. We could waive the copays for medicines. We could do remote monitoring at home much more reliably. We could use now AI to track the blood pressures. We could use algorithms to talk about how to titrate the medication. We could provide larger bonuses to health systems that do better, but we don't. And another issue is that the people who benefit the most from blood pressure control are ultimately the people bearing risk, so insurance companies. And in our insurance system, people can switch insurance every year. And so that also makes the long-term benefit sort of elusive to capture for the insurance companies. And so nobody really does better when a patient's blood pressure is better controlled, other than the patient, of course. And so that's the problem that we try to point out in the paper that needs to be addressed. And we talk about some solutions for how one might better align those incentives and have people do better when the patients do better.
Beyond those incentives, you also talk in your article about changes to information systems. So how could increased access to data and technological tools facilitate better hypertension treatment?
One of the really cool things about AI is that it's made tracking things virtually free. For many years, we've talked about the hard part of if a patient has a blood pressure cuff at home, how do we get that data in front of a doctor and able to intervene on it? And it's been very hard. It's been a combination of faxes and spreadsheets and things buried in the EMR. I'm very hopeful that actually AI, particularly embedded in the EMR, will allow that data to be analyzed in real time. And then actually with algorithms, give patients information for how they could change their blood pressure medications if they need to better control it. But I'm thinking AI is going to be a big solution here integrated into the EMR. And we're seeing that already with decision support systems and things like ambient notes that can look up data for you in real time and give you suggestions.
And then what about care delivery? How could changes to protocols or workflows improve hypertension control? Is that also somewhere where AI could help?
I think AI is much better than our current systems at giving us notifications for when something needs to be attended to or changed. Even more, it's beginning to look like it's safe for AI systems to actually offer treatment suggestions or make medication recommendations. The state of Utah just launched a pilot with Doctronic to allow an AI agent to prescribe medications of many kinds. So you could imagine that you could have clinical treatment algorithms that actually are run by AI systems that instruct patients on things to do that take the clinician and the delays that come from engaging clinicians out of the loop.
Finally, given current political barriers and healthcare budget constraints, what do you think would motivate regulators and healthcare systems to invest in the kind of reforms that you've been talking about?
Well, one is for the Medicare system, if we control blood pressure better, It's going to reduce heart attacks and strokes by tens of thousands per year, which will save a lot of money. That's part of the motivation for CMMI, the Medicare Innovation Center, announcing in December and launching soon in April, a new program called Access, which actually will pay for AI-run algorithms and agents to monitor clinical data and then make interventions. And so they, for the first time, have made a payment model that is one of the areas they're targeting is actually blood pressure control. And it should create a lot of incentive to make companies and systems to actually respond to blood pressure control and intervene. The second thing that they allow with the Access model that CMMI launched is to eliminate co-payments. And so to the extent that the cost of the drug is a barrier, you can eliminate them for people who are in these programs for blood pressure control. So that's sort of one example. Medicare, of course, will save tens of millions of dollars later by having better blood pressure control, because we know that that will lead to fewer strokes, heart attacks, and deaths. Another example would be a proposal in the paper to lengthen the duration of commercial insurance plans from 1 year to 3 to 5 years. And that would create much more incentives for commercial insurance plans to actually also put in place similar programs and pay for similar disease management programs to monitor and intervene on blood pressure sooner. At the end of the day, one thing we need to do is to help doctors make more frequent medication titrations and changes, because we know that virtually every patient with blood pressure can be controlled with effective low-cost medications. In fact, 80% of the time, doctors don't make changes to medications when patients come in to visit, despite blood pressure that's still out of control. So one of the things I'm hoping for is that these new AI products and solutions will lead to much more rapid intervention and much better care for patients.
Thank you, Dr. Kocher. Funding for this interview is provided by the Doris Duke Foundation, committed to building a creative, equitable, and sustainable future.